Nate Parrish returns to The Antidote. It's good to have you back, Nate.
It's good to be here, man. 3 years?
It's been a while. Yeah, it was. It was 2022 when we last spoke.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're constantly busy.
It just looks like that, you know. Yeah, I stay pretty busy. I'm a guy that likes to do a little bit of everything.
Well, listen, you and I are going to get into your new album, Make Me a Mountain. But first off, how about when we go into your deep, dark past?
Yeah, let's go.
Going way, way back, you were in the band Worth Dying For.
Yes.
And you guys had a number one hit in 2011. Can you tell us about the song Savior?
Man, that's such a fun story. So I still have it in my garage, but I wrote that song in 2005. I was a, you know, like punk, emo, screamo guy. And I really wanted to make worship music for people like me and my crew, you know, black hoodie, black fingernail polish and stuff like that. So I actually wrote that song in like a drop tuning, and it had all those like dissonant, like, you know, Norma Jean chords in there and stuff. And I was really trying to push that. And I remember I played it for the band and they were like, it's too much. Our pseudo manager at the time thought it was too much. And so I was kind of bummed. So the first album, if you've heard it, has some screaming stuff, but it's really buried. So that's me. I scream all on that album, but they really buried it in the mix because they were scared it was going to scare, you know, people. And then when the second album came around, they're like, okay, we've established, now let's do that song. So it didn't actually get recorded until like 6 years later.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and we made some adjustments. The drummer, Josh, took part of the lyrics and made that bridge, which was really cool. But when that song came out, I was already in another band. I was in another band at Spirit West Coast, and Cutlass, the guys, came up to me and said, congratulations, dude. And I was like, oh, for what? Like, your song's number one. I was like, which song? Like, oh, the Savior, that Worth Dying For, right? You're in Worth Dying For. So I was like, no. So I had no idea.
Well, talking about Cutlass, you've also been their guitarist.
Yeah.
Now, both they and Worth Dying For, or at least different parts of their career, have put out rock worship music.
Mm-hmm.
So what about with Nate Parrish? Would you ever describe your music as being worshipful?
Yeah, I would actually. I think the mistake that we make from time to time is that we categorize worship as a genre. It's not. Worship's not even music, but that's what we associate with. You say worship, like, oh, you Phil Wickham. No. Worship is a posture unto God. That's what worship is. So with my music, I look at it as it is my worship to God, but I don't consider it congregational. You're not going to play my music in congregation. All right, everyone, let's sing this song about, you know, telling politicians they suck. You know, that's not going to happen. But within that, coming from a Christian worldview, yeah, that is my worship. And I think Small, which is on the new album, that was a single. That one is like probably the closest, I would say, to like a quote-unquote congregational traditional worship song.
It's funny that you brought that up because I do want to get into it. Okay, so you've already talked about style, but your music style is certainly punk. But what's different about your music is that it can come across as, on the surface, being bright and happy, but the topics go deep, like what you hear on Small. I need some new words because I can't speak. I need a resurrection because this is killing me, and I want to feel alive. So you got to tell us, is that the real Nate Parrish?
Yeah, it's funny because I do wear all, that's like a running joke, like, oh, Nate, he wears all black. He must be depressed.
Because you are emo.
Yeah, I'm not, I wouldn't consider myself a, you know, sad guy or depressed, anything like that. My wife describes me as conflicted, you know, introspective. And I look at the world and I see obviously all the beauty, but that I do have is where I see a lot of the other stuff too. And that affects me deeply. And I carry that with me. And music is a way for me to process all that. Like there's a line in one of the songs on the album called Bad News. It says, I can't share my feelings unless it's through rock and roll. Just because that's just how I do it. And I think it keeps me regulated, you know?
So is this you then being critical about the world or just a chance to vent?
I think it's both. I mean, you know, I think with the first two albums, I had this conviction that, okay, I'm going to point out what's wrong, but I don't want to leave it there. I want to offer hope and a solution. And I think that's still good. But on this album, I kind of let myself off the hook where there will be some, there's some stuff on there where it's like, no, this sucks. And that's it, period. I don't have an answer. I don't know what the silver lining is. So I'm just going to leave it and be honest that I don't like it. This is not good. You know, so it's a little different that way.
You wouldn't work well directing a movie then, because everybody wants a concrete ending to a film. And when it's open-ended, they're like, but what happens?
Right. Well, that's the beauty of music is like, or art in general, you know, of course someone, they want to know, all right, what did you write this song about? And I could tell you what I wrote it about. But I think the cooler thing is to not tell you and let you interpret it, because that's what makes art art. It changes. Like Small, the song you were talking about, meant something different to me when I wrote it than it does at this exact moment in my life. Same song, it's just a different perspective. So I would never want to give you all the answers, because I don't want to take away that ability that music has to like say different things to different people.
It allows the listener then to develop their own thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something I'm curious about is, did you have anything special in mind when you were putting together the Make Me a Mountain album? Would you say that there's a theme to it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a concept album, but the theme is mountains. It actually came from a random YouTube rabbit hole I went down where I was watching an interview with Shia LaBeouf, and, you know, who's just been through a lot of life. And he was talking about being a parent. He described it as something like, he's like, you're like a mountain. And I don't know what it was. It just clicked. And so, and the imagery of the mountain and all the different facets, you might think of a mountain, oh, it's tall and it's whatever. But like, it has so many different facets to it. It's immovable unless God wants to move it. It's got cave, you know, all these different aspects of it. And it's funny, I didn't know this, think about this at the time, but now looking back, my dad, he used to come to my basketball games, and he was tall like me, had long white hair and a white beard. And all my friends called him Smoky Mountain. They're like, dude, Smoky Mountain's here. And I'd look over and he wouldn't sit down. He would just cross arm, like stand by the wall by himself and watch the game. And I was like, why doesn't he sit down? He just wanted to stand there and watch. So then it clicked. I was like, mountain. Oh, so like it's just this full circle moment. And so I was like, that's what I'm going to call the album. That's what I'm going to talk about.
So the mountain part of it does relate to your height.
Yeah. My height. Yeah. Yeah. All of it. All of it. There's mountains and references to mountains all throughout the album.
You have to fess up. How tall are you?
I'm not like a giant, but I'm pretty tall.
You know, I sometimes wonder what's driving you when you write some of these songs. Like on Pendulum People, when it says, it's a never-ending war when we settle every score. Is this worth dying for? Pendulum people taking swings at me. Guillotine steeples coming down on me.
Yeah.
But that's another one of those open-ended that you are not going to admit what it's about.
That's one of my favorite lyrics from the album, actually. That little chunk right there. The pendulum people taking swings at me, guillotine steeple falling down on me. That's a cool lyric. I like that. The song as a whole is a observation of humanity, where it's, we have not figured out balance at all. It's constantly going from one extreme to the other. That's all we know how to do. So like, if we are really upset at this side of the political aisle, we're going to run to the complete opposite side. And then we're going to run back when that one gets too extreme, we're going to run back to the other side. And we never stop in the middle and play. What if we kind of just had a tension and we go to extremes? And weird how we circle back and history repeats itself.
Isn't that even more prevalent in the last couple of years?
Growing up, my mom was really involved in politics. and my dad wasn't, and I could care less, you know. When you get older, I think it starts to kick in a little bit. You know, you start paying taxes and you're like, what are they doing with my money? You know, so mm-hmm. you care a little bit more. But I never really noticed until, yeah, maybe like last 10 years or something like that, how crazy it's gotten, where it's just another religion that we made up, another golden calf, as it were.
I was going to say, is it a religion or is it a cult?
Yeah, it's a cult. Cult's a better word for it. You know it's a cult because you're excommunicated the minute you don't even have to leave the cult. You just have to ask a question. You're excommunicated and or destroyed. That's how you know it's a cult.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nate, you're one of those creatives that makes everybody jealous, because here you are speaking with us about music, but you're also a visual artist and run Black Pastel Design. Does this mean that you have no limitations creatively?
I definitely do have limitations, for sure. I can't play the drums. I wish I could. I think it comes from when I found my music, you know, it was punk rock in high school. And the ethos of punk rock, especially in the late 90s, 2000s, before that, it's another thing where I wouldn't categorize it as a genre. I would say it's a mindset, and it's a DIY ethos. We're going to be in control of what happens with our music and our band. So how do you do that? Well, you make all your own stuff. And so for me, it was like, I'm going to do all the artwork and be really involved in the music videos or do the lyric videos. I want to do all the stuff. So for better or worse, you could say, this is definitely Nate. You love it or you hate it, but you know who it came from.
How do you find all the time? Because here you are making the music, but then creating your own art and doing it for so many other bands.
I don't watch TV. I think that's it. I just don't watch TV.
So it makes a big difference in time, doesn't it?
It does. I am always kind of, so I'm always writing, no matter what. I did some writing today. Pretty much every day I'll either write some guitar stuff or write down lyrics or do something and create as well. You know, I'm working on artwork right now for a church in a different state. It keeps you sharp. And there was a time where I stopped writing music because I felt just like suffocated, and it was really hard to get that started up again. And so I don't want to go back to that. So I try to stay consistent, and that ends up saving you time, because you're like warmed up all the time.
Now, with not watching television, do you ever feel like you're culturally unaware?
No, because I do listen to like podcasts or YouTube. I'm listening to it while I'm doing stuff. So I'm trying to multitask. I'm listening to something.
You know, there's something I've always been curious about. Would you say that there's a relationship between visual and musical art?
Oh, yeah. If you watch a movie, I got this Zack Snyder poster behind me. I went to a screening of his cut of Batman versus Superman, and he did like a Q&A. And, you know, if you watch a movie, part of what makes those movies great is the Hans Zimmer score. If you watch a movie, take the music out. It's not going to be.
No, it's boring.
Boring. And now you can listen to a soundtrack and it's cool, but what are you thinking about when you listen to the soundtrack? Thinking about what's happening in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think they go together. And that's why I really like, I get to do both. So while I'm making a song, I'm thinking, all right, this is going to be fun. How am I going to do the artwork? And I just love how it comes together.
So when's Zack Snyder going to call you up and say, hey, Nate, I want you to score this movie for me?
I would die, Dave. I would die. We did have a really nice interaction. I made a rushing nesting doll set of the Justice League. Really cool. I showed it to him and he was just like kind of blown. I have a picture of it. He's like, what the? And I was like, dude, I want you to have it. He's like, no, I can't. I was like, please. You're my favorite. Take it. And so I'm hoping that some days he just looks and sees that on the mantle and he's like, you know what? I'm going to hit that guy up.
And it's cool when you can meet people like that, other creative people.
It was so cool. There was actually before, I don't know if you followed the saga, but the whole Snyder cut of Justice League, that whole thing that happened, they were campaigning to get his cut released. They did a contest to design a poster. And so I was like, I have to do it. And it was during the pandemic. It was like 2020, I think. Mm-hmm. And my poster actually made the top five. And the winner got to go on set. And I was like, God, please. I got so close. It was actually worse because I got close. But yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
But yeah, but meeting him, he was really great. He's actually was a very nice man, and you could tell he really cared about his fans. It was awesome.
Okay, so that was going way, way, way off topic. You brought in a couple of guests on Make Me a Mountain, and you pulled in someone I know fairly well, Jason Dunn, ex of Hawk Nelson, and he gave his vocals on Under the Weather. How did you dream up giving him a call?
So I've only met Jason once. It was back in 08. We were playing a festival. At that time, Hawk Nelson was huge.
Yeah.
We looked at them as like, man, whatever they're doing, we need to like copy, you know, we need to figure out everything, presentation, everything. And so I remember after a show, I was loading up our trailer and this dude comes over like, hey, you need some help? And I was like, who the heck is this? And it was Jason Dunn. He started pushing cabs up into our trailer. Oh, thanks, dude. Do you want to come on the bus and say hi to everyone? He's like, sure. And so we talked for a little bit and he was super cool. And then I followed him, you know, I hit the whole saga with him leaving Hawk Nelson and then, you know, going the different route. And I listened to a podcast. I think it was the Labeled podcast. It's like a Tooth and Nail podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of opened up about his life and struggles. I had no idea. And then about how he's come back to the Lord. And I was like, dude, that episode choked me up. I was crying listening to that. It was so beautiful. And so I was like, ah, I should really see if Jason will be on this album. It's not just like the talent or the voice or whatever. That's fine. But like people, I could tell, like, it's like this dude has been through it and he's come out the other side. And I really admire that. So I would love to have him on there. And I wrote him. He's like, yeah, sure. And then when I send him a song, I was like, I heard nothing for like a year.
Oh, no.
So I was like, okay. And then I was like, I got to try again. I found his email. So I wrote him and I was like, hey, man, I have this song. Would you sing on it? He's like, I'd be honored. And then he knocked it out in a couple of days and boom, it was just like that. He absolutely nailed it. He did the vocals, but then he also added his own ad-libs and it's like super great. And then we talk off and on and we did that little video together that I put out last week. And he's a good dude, man.
He's a fun guy. It's just, you have to be able to tolerate the ADHD.
Sure. I can do it. I can do it. I got a 5-year-old, so I'm good.
One verse from Under the Weather says, stop starting wars. Stop wanting more. You'll never have enough power. It's all control. It's all we know. We'll never have all the answers. You're making a political statement.
Yeah, you could say that. Maybe politics, yes. You can interpret it that way. I also think it's just talking about humanity in general. Like, you could try to take things and you could try to like solve every problem. You're just not going to be able to do it. So let's come to a realization that we sometimes just have to accept the fact that someone else is in charge here. It's not any of us on this planet. I think that's a good starting point, a way to look at the world. Because then it recalibrates you where you're like, yeah, maybe it isn't my place to control everything. You know what I mean?
That's hard for a lot of people, though.
Well, it's hard for probably most people. That's why I put it in there. Yeah.
I mean, after all, you have a 5-year-old. How much control do you really have?
None. I have no control. That's why, you know, I'm thinking about, because a lot of the album is about being a parent and the aspects of being a mountain and how that applies to being a parent. I was thinking the other day, like, that is really, it's just so apparent that God's design of having kids, it's not just repopulate or whatever. It's for the parent. It's another salvation for the parent. And it's like one of the ways you can get over yourself is you have to care for someone else. And when you have a kid, you're it. They can't do anything. Like, you are going to keep that kid alive. And instinct kicks in and you know that that's what you're designed to do. It's like a kill switch that God put in humans where he's like, click that and you're going to get over your selfishness really fast.
because everything else goes into the background when you have a child.
Yep. Yeah. The stuff that I was telling my friends, cause we all have little kids, and I was like, well, you know, I didn't really want kids before. I wasn't sure the responsibility. I wanted to be a rock star. And then I have a son. I'm like, everything else is stupid now. What would I even do with my life if I didn't have my son?
I want to switch away from music for a second. A few weeks ago, you posted on Instagram, criticism is branded as gossip and disagreement is called hate speech. Jesus, the one we follow, was the walking, talking embodiment of truth, and yet we value unity over truth. You got to have a story about what brought that about.
You want to get spicy, Dave?
Okay, be spicy.
Yeah, I realized that even in the Christian community, truth isn't actually a lot of times isn't like a value. It's not a high value. Unity, it's pushed to the top. You know, don't speak about that. It's going to make us all look bad. Even if this, you know, pastor's abusing someone, don't speak out against them because they're doing good things too. That's not real unity. That's unity based on a lie. And Jesus, hey, the truth will set you free. We throw that around, but we act as if the truth is not of high value. And you realize when you look at Jesus, what he did was speak truth 100% of the time. Not only speaking the truth, he is the truth. So how can we follow him and sacrifice truth for unity? He didn't. He would tell people things that he knew would make them leave. Hey, you got to drink my blood. And they left. So for me, I was a part of an abusive church environment and held my tongue for years for the sake of unity. And after becoming aware that there was dozens and dozens of people that their lives have been destroyed by this same institution, that's not unity. I value truth over unity. I'm going to speak the truth, regardless of the consequences.
Mm.
So that's where that came from. You know, Christians are shamed if they speak out. I mean, Julie Royce does so much good work exposing all these, you know, Michael Tate.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, no one would touch that guy. And I meet more people now that knew about that.
Oh, boy.
I never heard anything about it because I was outside of, thank God, CCM world. But there's, oh, yeah, what the heck? Well, we didn't want to. Then what are we doing here? What are we actually doing? And when Julie Royce comes and exposes people, she is now the villain. It's mind-blowing to me. Like, wait, she's the villain, not the guy that was abusing people? The one that told you that he was abusing people is the villain? No, I'm not a part of that.
It's because people get too wrapped up in the personality instead of what that person really is deep down inside.
Well, it's just disappointing, right? I mean, I was never a DC Talk Newsboys fan, not my vibe. But I can understand if you were, you don't want to accept that reality.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was that guy the whole time. That's who he is. I don't want that. No one, and if I was a fan, I would want it even less. It would be devastating. And it's because people don't speak up. You asked for the spice, Dave.
I did. Nate Parrish has a chance to preach here on The Antidote. You know, something I've been wondering about is, are you beginning to feel your age? Because a couple of the songs on Make Me a Mountain, Record Store, and I'm All Right, have you sort of looking at the past?
Yeah.
Not always nostalgically.
Yeah. Yeah. Record Store, that came from a visit I had to my hometown of Stockton, California. And I was driving on Pacific Avenue, and the record store I used to go to, Tower Records, I used to go there like probably 4 or 5 times a week. And they turned it into a bank. So that opening lyric, turn my favorite record store into a bank,
was literal.
It's literal. I said that out loud. I said, they turn my favorite record store into a bank? I was like, that's a good lyric. Because it's, you know, it speaks to like all that, you know, culturally, how much we've drifted away from like cool stuff. And what's less rock and roll than a bank? So yeah, it's literally about that. It's a metaphor, you know, it's metaphorical to the song, but that's where it came from.
Right. I do appreciate how you invited your wife, her input into one of your songs, because the song's titled You're Wrong Again. And I'm sure your wife has said that to you. How many times?
Oh, just like once. Just once. And then I fixed it and never happened again.
Okay. Seriously, the opening verse can fit something a lot of artists go through when it says, "You promised me a world of green. If I would only ride the fence, you said that we would live in peace in exchange for my silence." And I do get that, but what's the price that you have to pay?
Yeah, I mean, silence is the price. I wrote that. It was interesting. I go back and forth on this feeling I have that, you know, as a Christian, we are, we look at the world and we see humans. Everyone's human, right? We're all hopefully children of God. If we're not, let's tell them about Jesus. And I came to the realization that I was like, I think there's going to be some people in life where we're not going to be cool. As you get older too, and you interact with more people and you see the world and you realize like there are people in this world where we're just not going to be cool. That person is wrong. And that's the end of the sentence. And as a Christian, you're like, well, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to love everyone. It's like, it's not a love thing. Let's just face the reality here. It's like, there's people who are just wrong. I'm going to be sometimes just wrong. And I don't want to play nice. Being nice is not a fruit of the spirit. Being kind is different. Being kind still can involve telling someone the truth in a graceful way. But there's going to be times you're just like, nope, you're wrong. You're wrong again. And that's it. I'll forgive. But if you think I'll forget, you're wrong again.
The reason that I mentioned about it being from an artist's perspective is that I had recently spoken with somebody, and effectively the record label wanted him to be a certain way that did not tie into his Christian walk, and he gave up his career.
Yeah. Well, like back what we were talking about, I mean, there are rules to this game of music, and the Christian music industry, it's not really different than the secular music industry. They all have their own set of rules and they overlap a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
The record label is supposed to make money. Don't be fooled. Their job is not to believe in you. Their job is to make money off of you. So if they can make more money off of you, if you cover Phil Wickham, then let's make you do that to make me money. And in return, we'll keep, you know, promoting you. If you don't do that though, well, you know what happens, right? So every musician at some point has to go through that. I've been through that scenario where, you know, like we were talking about with Worth Dying For, like the first album, there's too much screaming. We don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you signed us and you knew that's what we do. What they really thought was, we like how you guys look. Maybe we can market that. Let's give it a try. Maybe we can convince you to not be so extreme. You have to be aware of what the sacrifices are going to be and how far you're going to go. And sometimes it works for you and sometimes it doesn't. Like, you know, the band you're talking about, them leaving that label or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it'll be less commercially successful, but I guarantee it will be more fulfilling.
And that's what happened. I suppose you and I should get into the closing song and the title track, Make Me a Mountain. Yeah, I've got some cuts that I'll make into caves. It's a place for you to stay. And when the wind and waves come, I'll keep you standing above. It's where I found my faith. So life gives us all cuts and bruises. Will faith heal all things?
Yes, it will. But you'll have scars and you'll have them for a reason. I think we grow most from the hard circumstances. If you look at like really great songwriters and great songs, they're probably not the happiest songs in the world. I mean, one of my favorite writers is Johnny Cash,
mm-hmm.
Bob Dylan. These aren't guys that are like singing about sunshine and rainbows. Like Johnny Cash is wearing all black as a statement.
That's where you get your style from.
Yeah, I took it from Johnny, yeah. But I think that's just how you grow. That song, The Cuts That I'll Make in the Caves, is sort of like painting a picture of when I was growing up, when I was observing my parents and how their dynamic was as parents. I have a lot of damage from that. But I'm going to take that scar, and you're going to be able to hide in that because I've learned what not to do from that.
You realize that there is another way of becoming a mountain.
What's that?
You just eat fast food for every single meal.
I think that's how you, yeah. Yeah. Maybe not so tall, but wide. Just like a mountain range.
Well, seriously, though, part of the background dialogue does speak about deciding what you want to be when you grow up.
Yeah.
Doesn't that still change as we grow older?
Yeah, that part in the song. So that's me and Josiah having a phone call, the producer, about the theme of the album and how when someone asks you when you're a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? We usually say like baseball player or an occupation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because you're picking a job. And then when you get older, you realize like jobs are good. Obviously, we need money to live. But how do you want to be remembered? I don't want to be remembered as, oh, that was Nate. He was like the guy that he was a musician. That'd be cool. But like you want to be remembered as who you were, kind of person you were. And so that's where it changes. If so you ask an adult, hopefully, you know, if you ask me, what do you want to be? Like, I want to be a mountain.
But that's it. It's a big difference between a job, a career, and a vocation.
Yeah.
And this is your vocation.
Technically, it's a low-paying vocation, but yeah, it's it's who I am. I mean, that's really it, right? I do it regardless of what money comes in or doesn't come in. I've always done this. I don't think I've ever made money being a musician more than I've put in. And I'm totally fine with that because that's who I am.
So why don't you tell us, what kind of an impact do you want the album to make?
Yeah, music is so important to me, and I know to a lot of people, it can drastically change your trajectory of your day and sometimes your life. I know for me, music changed the trajectory of my life, and not like an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
Music has given me my life, essentially. So I hope that this album can be that for other people. One of the things I put for the descriptors of the album. So when we got started, Josiah is like, all right, write like words that would describe what the album will be like. And one of them was beautiful, which is funny for a punk album.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be dirty and gritty and no, beautiful. And I hope people can hear that and it changes a potentially negative trajectory in their life. It's a mountain in their path, so they have to change course.
Do they climb up or they go around?
Whatever works, man.
Well, Nate Parrish has been here on The Antidote sharing about Make Me a Mountain. Thanks so much for taking time for us, Nate.
Hey, it's good talking to you, buddy. I appreciate you.